we talking about real kung fu or video game kung fu?
Yes.
Okay, oh, that's what I thought.
Welcome to A More Philly Union, the podcast where we bask in the totality of the union's current winning streak as they continue to eclipse the competition on their transit across the country. We are your hosts. I'm E.
I'm C.
And I'm Paul.
Nicely done.
Yeah, you know.
Slow clap.
We're not anything if not topical, so all right, well, before we get too out of hand here, let's do a little bit of the bookkeeping up front. The Help Us Help the U Challenge update, we're shooting for that 3,000 download goal as soon as we can. Currently we are at 1,935. It was a big week. We got about 39 downloads. And the exciting bit was our international brand has continued to expand.
Nice.
As we have now new downloads, first downloads in Israel and Japan.
Very cool.
So we can now say we've played Japan, which I feel is a big thing. But so anyway, yeah. So keep those downloads coming. As soon as we hit that 3,000, we'll be the 3,000 downloads. We'll be making our, another donation to the Philadelphia Union Foundation. And in the meantime, if you want to show some love, you can just go over to their website at www.philadelphiaunionfoundation.org and click on that donate button and tell them A More Philly Union sent you.
Very cool.
Just a fun fact about the number 1935. In the year 1935, this was the discovery of the neutron and radar technology.
Wow. Interesting.
So I thought that would be appealing to YouTube.
Wow. Try not to totally nerd out on that. So
yeah.
Let's just keep talking about sports instead.
I've opened the door for you guys. Yeah. Once again.
Let's talk big round ball.
Yeah. Not the small ones with integer spin and no charge. Okay, we're done. Okay, let's keep moving. All right. Well, the union are continuing their road trip across the U.S. They were in Nashville this past weekend.
In a road movie to Nashville.
It's a good throwback, too.
Yeah.
They were in Nashville trying to keep their streak alive of undefeatedness. Along with who was it? LA and
Galaxy,
and there was one other, and
Cincinnati.
So there were three teams last weekend going into their matches with an undefeated streak.
And as the boys who wrote the Highlander series would say, there can be only one.
There can be only one. So I forget. We just spoiled this thing right up at the front.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we don't try
absolutely
to hide
no
it.
Absolutely.
Well, if they're listening to this podcast, they should know how the results ended up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So the union not only avoided losing, but rather won.
Yeah.
Another road trip.
Another road game.
Which is,
imagine that.
Not an easy thing to do. And the union emerged this weekend as the only team now in MLS with an unbeaten
without
streak,
a loss.
Without a loss. Mm-hmm. Interesting. The official national Apple commentators for the game. It was one guy, and the other one was Brian McBride. no disrespect to the first guy. I just,
didn't
Brian McBride kind of stands out. It's good.
You're not
see
Brian
him.
McBride. That's basically it. Yeah.
I do remember at one point they were talking about, during this game, they were talking about head injuries in soccer.
Yes,
and
they
Brian
were.
McBride definitely has a track record for head injuries in soccer in particular. Just
okay, since we're talking about it, what is your when you think Brian McBride, what picture do you think of the most? I can tell you which one. What I think of
is it US Italy.
U.S. Italy,
yep.
Where he looks like a freaking Revolutionary War survivor with a head bandage that looks like he just, you know, he should be carrying a musket around.
That was, which World Cup was that? That was
2000.
Because I think Bruce Arena was still,
yes,
still manager. Yes. He was playing those weird 3-5-1 formations that I think we didn't do too well in that. But I still remember it was U.S. Italy. And Brian McBride went up with the header.
Foot to the face.
Was it a foot or I thought it was an elbow?
I don't know. It was I'm pretty sure that one was a foot.
Yeah.
He went down, the foot came up, and
Yeah,
he's like, cut me, Mick. Just wrap it up. Looked like he had like a wad of paper, toilet paper around his head and played. He's like, just let me back on the field.
Seriously, just Google Brian McBride, Italy, and blood and see what I bet you the picture comes up.
I'm pretty sure he had to change his shirt in that game.
Yeah, they did.
Multiple times, one imagines. The commentator who he was co-hosting with actually said that he was trying to pull the picture of Brian McBride to show to his son.
Oh,
explain who he was. And he said it did not take him long to find one where he was bloodied.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you've taken a few.
I don't know if he's still the highest scoring American player in the EPL. I think he might have been eclipsed by Dempsey, but when he was playing for Fulham, I know he had quite a run of goals for them.
For Full America.
Yeah, Full America.
Yeah. It was him and Timmy Howard. Shoot, now I'm getting confused. So yeah, Timmy did go to Everton.
Because I want to say Carlos Bocanegra was on Fulham for a while. Gooch. Yeah, they had like three starters that were U.S. men's national team. Anyway, let's get off. I mean,
we are digressing.
I certainly love Brian McBride as a player, but his commentary work needs some help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's hope he just ramps up his efforts there a little bit.
That would be nice.
He's got to channel that on-field energy into his on-air energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's maybe start with the lineups here. A lot of
news out of this one.
Yeah, so I kind of one of the big things to start off with was Blake was not in net. Zemla started in net for this game.
Yeah, the story is that Blake aggravated something. He got cleared on before the game from his concussion, but yeah, he aggravated something in training, so they decided to keep him out and put Semelin in, which was a surprise. You know, I hadn't heard about that before seeing the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I know we'll talk about more about when we go over the game, but having Semelin in net is becoming more. I'm getting used to this. I'm getting comfortable with this. I mean, again, Blake any day, absolutely. But this Zemla is just, he played a great game, some great saves. He's a shining silver medal that's starting to get a little bit of a golden luster. I guess the other thing too about the lineup, which kind of stuck out for me, was that it was a 3-5-2. Now I know there's these like 3-2-3-2, whatever, you know.
Yep.
5-6-7-8 Schlemiel lineups. but this felt like more of an official 3-5-2.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely with Lowe, Elliott, and Glesnes starting, definitely felt like Curtin had an idea about what he wanted to do and have the defense lock down that play back there. And then Ora also apparently was suffering some plantar fascia on his foot, so they decided he didn't even make the trip to Nashville.
Okay.
So that's why Sullivan and Carranza started up top. And yeah, I mean, I wonder if Curtin decided, all right, we're just going to come out and be completely defensive for the first 15 minutes and do our best to keep them off the board and frustrate them and make them just keep coming at us.
Yeah, I definitely think that reflects whether or not that was the intention in the way the first half of the game went. This definitely feels like a game of two different halves. And I don't want to get too far ahead, but this first half definitely felt like it was Nashville's half.
I would say the first 59 minutes
Yeah.
We're almost Nashville's half. I mean, or portion would probably be better to say. I mean, I don't want to jump too far ahead either, but those substitutions made a world of difference.
Yeah. Well, real quick, just with the lineup too, before mm-hmm. we jump forward
yeah.
more.
Yeah.
With that 3-5-2, the one thing that for me that was of interest was having that 5-man line in the middle, but Wagner and Harriel as the wings. It really, mm-hmm. it seems to me that really allows them to embrace that wing position, knowing that you have arguably the three biggest people on the team behind you on defense. And that just gave Wagner and Harriel free run up and down the sides of the field. You know, servicing on the attacks, pinching on the defense. But yeah, interesting lineup.
It gives Harriel and Wagner a little more freedom. It also let McGlynn play deeper in the game so he could distribute from a little bit further back. Mm-hmm. Gave him a little time on the ball. So I think this was one of McGlynn's better games in his distribution. Like, he was able to ping the ball around more and see where the open space was. And, you know, he could find Garanza making runs. He could find Sullivan making runs. And so, you know, while it definitely felt like Nashville were pressing the Union a lot in the until they made the subs, they didn't really seem to beat the Union defense, it felt like. Not totally.
Yeah, there was one small exception.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that one.
Yeah.
So this was a Nashville attacking down their left side. So they were attacking down Harriel's side. And it was Schaffelberg who I think they were playing a 3-5-2 against the Union. And Schaffelberg was that left winger. Or wingback or whatever you call it, the furthest out midfielder. And he took on Harriel, beat Harriel towards the end line, played it across, and Surridge spun Elliot. I'll say that he grabbed him, and it was pretty obvious in the replay. He pulled on Elliot's arm, got him spinning the other direction. Now, Elliot probably shouldn't have let him get around that side of him, but, there was a pretty obvious grab, not enough to get a call, and mm-hmm. Surridge headed the ball past, and into the goal. You know, a couple of breakdowns there. Harriel let him get to the end line. Elliot got spun around. Semler, I don't know what Semler was doing. He just seemed to misplay that one altogether. He should have known that cross was coming in, but he seemed more in a position to stop a shot coming from Schaffelberg, which I didn't think was too likely.
Yeah, there was kind of a crush of players headed towards the goal between the Nashville player scoring, dragging a spinning Jack Elliott behind him, and then a Damian Lowe coming in to try to stop the header. It was definitely a massive, there's definitely a collision in the making right there. So there's definitely I could see how those could tend to be a little bit distracting.
I wasn't sure if Christy had anything.
Oh, no, I'm just sitting here thinking that your commentary sounds much more professional than mine, which would have been the lost member of the Cobra Kai dojo passed to Dolph Lundgren of the MLS, who managed to score on us. So
we got all the 80s bad guys.
Yeah, I got the 80s going on that one. So
Cobra Kai crosses it to Dolph Lundgren. Oh,
that is kind of what the commentary sounds like in my head.
No, that's
so it's a little more colorful.
Now I want to listen to that commentary in Christy's head.
I know, right?
Nobody wants to listen to my head.
I think you can actually splinter off from this and just have a more successful go at that.
Oh my god!
Actually one of my mental notes from the game too. Was Sturridge, whatever his name is. I'm like, it's MLS Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren. Yeah, I have to admit, I did steal that from you a little bit. But yeah. So
if he dies, he dies.
Yeah, I mean, Sturridge certainly was making himself a pain throughout mm-hmm. the game. He's doing what good forwards do and trying to rattle the defense. That was a shame that they gave up that play, but. Good scorers will find a way to score.
Yeah. So end of the first half, You know, we go into halftime and Nashville is now up 1-0. I'm sure there was probably some good strategery and motivation in the locker room, because it didn't take long in that second half for the Union to kind of reverse the flow of the game. At least I thought. Chris, to your point, right? It maybe took a little, maybe about 15 minutes or so.
Well, from my perspective, it was night and day before and after the 59th minute substitutions.
Like almost like a solar eclipse.
Oh, just... Lordy. Actually, no, I shouldn't say that. That was pretty good.
No, it was bad. It was bad.
It was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, you know, after that, I have it in my notes, and keep in mind that my understanding of total football comes mostly from Ted Lasso, which we actually haven't mentioned much this season. So I think it's okay.
Yeah.
But after that, I was watching them and I was thinking, I don't fully know who's playing where. I mean, in some cases, yes, but like, you know, it was interesting. There was just a lot of movement, and it seemed like the whole game had changed. So, you know, maybe it was hold them off, tire them out, and then we'll send them in and just totally switch what we're doing. That would kind of play into what you were saying, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was amazing how different it was. So
I agree. I definitely feel, because they made, just so if people didn't know, they made two subs in the 59th minute.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled Jack Elliott and they pulled off, was it Wagner?
Yeah, Wagner. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they put Bedoya and Mbaiza on. So Mbaiza went to the right and Harry all the way and shifted to the left. So they played a four players on the back line, and then they shifted to their diamond midfield. And they kept Sullivan up top until late in the game when Donovan came on. I would agree at that point. It definitely felt like the Union got on the front foot and just started wailing away on Nashville.
Yeah.
But one thing I would say is that I am actually encouraged by that fact that Curtin brings out other formations from time to time. Because I think in order to be an elite team, you have to have multiple ways to play.
I agree.
And while you can train those on the field during the week and in practice, and that's all well and good, and you can go over player roles, until you're playing at full speed against equal competition, it doesn't sink in the same way.
Yeah.
So, yes, I can understand people's frustration that it took to the 60th minute to make an adjustment. I can understand people being frustrated that he would roll it out, but I would disagree with both of those in general, because it was only 60 minutes of the game. You know, he did make a change. 60 minutes is about when Curtin starts making adjustments in most games.
Yeah.
At least as far as who's on the field, he'll make adjustments elsewhere as the games are going on. But I'm okay with them running out to 3-5-2, especially if it turns out to be something that they end up doing. Because like the 4-4-2 flat that they've been playing, that takes time to practice as well. It's not as much of a difference from as a 3-5-2, but I was okay with it. But Christy, I absolutely agree with you that it was almost like a light switch. Like all of a sudden, everyone was like, "Ah, oh, we're wearing comfortable shoes again. We don't, you know, we're not running. We're not playing soccer in dress shoes. Now we've got our cleats on. Now, oh, or you know, it's Inigo Montoya saying, oh, I'm not left-handed."
So, right, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
I just
to be clear, I wasn't like disappointed or mm-hmm. or railing against it. It was just marked to me a marked difference. But I think you're addressing the unseen Negadelphians, which in this case I am not one. Shocker. but it was very much night and day. But you're right. I mean, I think it's cool that we can play different formations. It does baffle me a little bit to wait. I know what you're saying. I know that's when they usually make subs. It baffles me a little bit to wait that long, but you know, I'm sure there is a rhyme and reason to it, you know. But because it really the first half didn't, I mean, it wasn't awful, but it just kind of didn't seem to be happening, you know. So but I don't really have any complaints, because it just blew the doors off once they changed it out.
So should we talk about the first goal?
Well, actually, Yeah, Paul, that, and Christy, those are interesting points because that didn't dawn on me, right? Because often when I think about, you know, the game and the strategy and the lineup, it does tend to have a static, yeah, it has like a static feel to it in the sense of we're going to play that, you know, the 4-4-2 or with the diamond center. And then like, it's all about just moving guys in and out of those set positions, right? So maybe someone's getting tired and you want to pull them out, but you put in, it's like one for one substitutions, right? And I mean, I know that's not always the case, but it felt like this game, Paul, that now that you, well, Christy, you mentioned the actual distinct point in the actual flow of the game. And Paul, you pointing that out with the change in the formation strategy. It's like, yeah, we went from a 3-5-2 to a 4-4-2 with that diamond center. And that could be a very powerful strategy in terms of playing out a season, because now, you know, players or teams are going to come in facing us, or when we go there and we face them, and they know the players they're going up against. And now it's just going to be a matter of, well, what
are they using their tiger kung fu,
yes,
or their snake style,
exactly, or crane beats cobra or whatever it is, right? And so now if we can like switch it up like mid game, and like, you know, it's
put your hands down, Christy.
she's absolutely like holding,
she's got her head in her hands, right? Like, no,
why? No. She's like, I thought this was supposed to be a sports podcast, not some nerd ass nonsense.
Not my husband and my brother-in-law reliving Saturday afternoon kung fu movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Please. No, I understand the digressions. I'm responsible for a lot of them. So yeah. No, it's fine. It just, I was laughing. I was trying not to be heard.
This is an interesting strategy. If we can master this art of being able to switch formations in the middle of games, I mean, going from a 3-5-2 to a 4-4-2, that is a significant shift. It's not like we're going from a, you know, a 4-4-2 to a, you know, a 4-5-1 or something, right? Where you're just kind of shifting one player. That's a sizable shift. And it's kind of one of those things where it's kind of cool in the sense of it's more, I mean, again, I hate to use the kung fu analogy, but it's, you know, you flow like water, right? It's this amorphous kind of strategy on the field. It is like total soccer, right? It is kind of like total soccer. It's all about maintaining those triangles, and you just you allow your formation to evolve to however it needs to outplay the other team. However, right, as we know from Murphy's laws, the more complex things tend to get, the more easy it is for something to go wrong. But
all right, now, I'm gonna digress a little bit further. So I can't remember who it was that was. It was an actor. They were talking about memorizing lines, and the whatever teacher he was going to, like this person, like most of us, you know, if they have to memorize the Gettysburg Address, they start with 4 score and 10 years ago, and they just go through the, you know, they start from the beginning of whatever it is they need to memorize to the end. And this acting teacher said, no, what you want to do is you want to start at the end and work your way to the beginning. Or yeah, so that you always know how where you're going to end up, so you can just keep practicing that every time you go through it. So how this relates to the Union is the Union know how to play the 4-4-2 diamond. If that's what we switch into,
yeah,
and as soon as they go into it, they immediately become very, very effective.
Gotcha.
If they're going from a less effective formation or a formation that they're learning to a formation that they are just ingrained on because they've been doing it for 6 years, it's easy. And you can see that result in this game. They made the switch in the 59th minute. They scored in the 62nd.
Yeah.
Like 3 minutes, they were on the field.
Yeah.
And it's, again, I hate to be going back to the kung fu, but if your opponent just knows that you're trying to, you know, for the first 60 minutes trying to throw right cross, they're going to be set to defend, and now all of a sudden you're throwing a left uppercut at them, there's a better chance you're going to land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to
are,
make
are it, we talking about real kung fu or video game kung fu?
Yes.
Okay, no, that's what I thought.
Let's make it work. It's like being able to bat from either hand, right?
Yeah.
You know, so you can switch your stance. I mean, Chrissy, more in your wheelhouse. Let's talk about boxing, right? You know, if someone is, if their left is just as good as their right and they learn how to fight from either foot, now it's going to be, it's kind of like, I will bring this back to a nerdy movie reference. It's like the 13th Warrior. When you give, like when the little guy goes up against the one big guy, picks a fight with him, and it looks like the little guy's losing, and all of a sudden he just turns around and just dispatches the big guy with no problem. And it's like, now I've created doubt, and now they have to worry about what they can't see. And I think that's what this strategic formation, right? So we walk out there with a 4-3-5-2. It's like a boxer who's strong in both arms is fighting off his right foot, you know, and all of a sudden now he switches to the left, right? It's the Inigo Montoya, start left-handed, but we switch to right. And now you have to account for what you can't see. So I don't know. It's hopefully this works out, because it's very exciting. It's very dynamic.
Yeah. And the Union's first goal, this was Carranza's goal. This was amazing.
Yes.
Let's break down what, you know, this was a deep pass from McGlynn, right? I think it was McGlynn who passed it to Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, to Sullivan. Yes.
I think so.
So it was McGlynn hitting like a 40-yard pass from like just over midfield to Sullivan, who was near the top of the 18-yard box. And full credit to Sullivan for somehow or another controlling that ball off of a shoulder while getting knocked down, playing it from his knees to keep it in front of him, and having the wherewithal to see Carranza making a late run. And then making that pass.
And being able to get back up and, making that pass. Let's talk about the getting back up. This is the rubber and magic goal for me.
Yes. Go ahead. Sure. Keep going.
Because it was just like, I mean, I actually have that in somewhere in my notes. I have too many screens open. But, the fact that he was drugged down, maintained everything possession. You just said, and made the pass successfully was just... I think I just said how. Derek. I was like, how?
Yeah.
How do you do that?
It's the only thing about this play that makes Carranza's finish less than otherworldly. Like, because Carranza makes the first touch as he gets the pass from Sullivan, and it's bouncing. Yeah. And he's just inside the 18-yard box. He's beaten his defender. He's one-on-one with the goalkeeper. And the ball is not in a very favorable position. And somehow he still powers it past to the side of the keeper and gets the first goal.
Yeah.
Like, if it wasn't for Sullivan's heroic play just before, that would easily be the best play out of this game.
Yeah.
What Carranza did.
Yeah. And I think it's for me, it's also worth mentioning. So like baby Carranza, Sullivan had two defenders and there was a third one coming in on his heels, and he kind of battles through it. And then Carranza basically had to face two defenders as well. For them to, it was very tight quarters. Nashville was collapsing down on our attackers. And just to get those passes through and get that shot off itself was,
One quick correction. It wasn't McGlynn. It was Martinez who made the pass to Sullivan. Yep.
That's our Leo.
That's right. That was an amazing pass. Like I said, 40 yards, gets it to Sullivan. Like you were saying, Sullivan somehow or another tangles up two and a half, almost three defenders, and finds Carranza making that run. Such a good goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I still, we watched the, on Apple TV, they have like, it is like a recap of the game, but it's a stylistic with music and everything. And it has like clips from before the game in the locker room and all that. Mm-hmm. And there was Jim Curtin, as the team's huddling up before the game starts. It's like, getting a road win is hard, but basically that's what we're going for. Our job is to silence 30,000 people. And that goal, I think Carranza scoring that goal achieved that goal of silencing the crowd. And particularly, I did like his little celebration in the corner. I don't know if it was a little pushing buttons or antagonistic, where he was doing like a little bit of air guitar on the corner flag.
Yeah. It was a little silly, but I'll take it. It's fine.
But yeah, I think at this point in the game, the tide was now absolutely in favor of the Union. The wind was absolutely at our backs, and it was our game to run. Now, I mean, Nashville did have a couple attempts. There was that one scramble in front of our net where Zemla kind of tangled up with a Nashville forward attacker. Ball was still in play. He scrambles to get up. They take a shot, and he did a very Blake thing, right, where he just jumped up in the air and got a glove on it and deflected the ball over the net, and then proceeded to start yelling at the ref because he was just taken out, but there was no whistle. So Zemla still had his work cut out for him, and
he did,
and still came through.
Yeah. I don't know how many saves he ended up getting credited for in this game, but I do know Nashville, the expected goals count for them. That's the calculated number of goals that they should have created based on the number of attacks that they had. It had an edge for the Union, but Nashville was still given an expected goals of 1.7. Mm. So Semla kept that 0.7 from happening.
Mm-hmm.
There's projections always never cease to make me giggle.
Well, but it's not as bad as baseball, where they just seem to have a stat for everything.
Oh, sweet Jesus, I know.
But soccer is starting to get more and more analytical in their approach.
Yeah. I hope they calm down a little bit, because having watched some baseball games back in the day with a good friend of ours, Frank, you guys all know, public does not know, but Frank, very much a statistics kind of guy, or at least very oriented around that kind of stuff, and it was a difficult watch. My color commentary was not appreciated. Anyway,
well, saying baseball is stupid. It's probably going to get you punched by some people.
Well, I was trying to be a little more creative than that, but so.
But it did take a while for the Union to find that game winner. And this game winner, once again, comes off of a set piece across a corner kick.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we were chatting about this a little bit, but this is the third game in a row now where a Union player has somehow or another been wide open on a corner kick and intelligently, cold-bloodedly almost finishes this for a goal.
Yeah.
McGlynn plays a beautiful ball into the box.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow or another, Gajdag is forgotten about on the far post, and Gajdag's not a big guy compared to a lot of the defenders just playing in this game. And he just bangs that ball off of his head over into the crossbar and into the net in the 90. I think this was in the 90th minute. Is that right?
Yeah. 90th minute.
Like, at some point it has to stop being a fluke and start being something that they're doing. I don't know. And again, I hate to use the phrase, but I don't know what kung fu they're doing on these set pieces that gets these teams to forget about some of their players, but it's working.
Well, I will say, having watched the replay tonight, it did seem like the player who was marking him may have gotten cocky too, because he thought he could jump up and head it away. That mm-hmm. looked to me what was happening, why he thought that was a better idea than just staying on Gajdag is unclear. That was definitely seems to be what was happening. He just kind of ran away from him and went for it, was nowhere near it.
Right.
Luckily.
That's the key. If you're going to go for it, you better hit it.
Yeah. Shoot for the king, you better not miss, right? Yeah. So. Yeah.
For our Wire fans. Omar coming. Gajdag coming. Yeah, that was just I almost wonder if he was surprised that it got to him. He was like, just here it is.
Yeah. If he was surprised, he did a good job of hiding it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And finishing the play. So
So now that goal puts him, I saw two different numbers. It's either one behind Sebastian Letou for overall goals by the Union, or six behind him, maybe just in season play. I'm not sure exactly why that was. Okay. Two different numbers that were out there, but
asterisk is on that. Yeah.
You know, he's definitely second overall all time Union scorer now, and he's closing in rapidly. So long as he finishes this season, he should be looking to break some records for the Union, which is huge.
Now, I have a question for you, and I think I asked this before. This is for both of you guys, since so many of his goals are set pieces, mainly penalties. Is there an asterisk on that in any way? I mean, not that it's easy to score a penalty, but it's not run of play. I think I would argue offhand, without something in front of me telling me this, that Letou's were probably more often run of play, but not exclusively. So does that change anything to you guys? I think I may have had this conversation already. I apologize if we did, but
listen, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast. I know we've kind of discussed it a little bit. You know, I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, if a team plays a game and they win because either they were playing really well or the other team was playing really bad, a win is still a win. Human beings, we like to boil things down to nice, simple bumper sticker facts, right? It's not always for the better, but we tend to like that. But there's a part of me that does, no surprise, I'm taking the middle of the road here. There's a part of me that does kind of agree with the sentiment. You know, like, you know, in theory, you could have a defender whose sole purpose is always to take the PK, and they could run up a pretty sizable, record for goals scored. But I don't know. I don't know. Paul, what do you think?
I think in my mind, PKs tend to be weighted about 0.6 of a goal.
Okay.
Like, I value run of play goals a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I definitely understand what you're saying there, Christy. But, you know, same point, like you did, like you also said, scoring goal penalty kicks is not easy. And to score every single time that you take a penalty kick in season play, that is an impressive feat that he has accomplished.
Yeah.
Because he's got 20 straight penalty kicks in MLS season play. His only miss was, what was that? That was
I couldn't remember.
One of the extra cup tournaments. I think he missed a penalty shot or a penalty kick in a PK shootout.
That doesn't count. That's pub league stuff. Nobody cares.
You know, I would agree that I would say that there's a small asterisk, not necessarily a big asterisk, next to Gajdag's thing, where I would want to see how many PKs did Seba have and how many PKs does Gajdag have. And, you know, Gajdag, you know, we've got him on contract for like two more years.
Mm-hmm.
So while his current run of play goals are wherever they're at, he could end up beating Sebastian's run of play goals before his contract's out.
Yeah.
That's the new goal. Once he beats this, and he to get rid of the asterisk, however big or small it might be, he needs to get the run of play goals, and then we'll be happy. I'm not discounting his achievements. I was just curious guys thought about that.
But I would agree with you. I would agree with you that there is a star there next to that number until he proves that he can hit it and run the play. And so far, he's scored four goals this year, none of them from the spot in MLS play.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's got to prove us all wrong or make us rethink, you know, goal is a goal. A goal by any other name is still a goal.
Yep. So definitely by that point, then, I think that Geodis Park was probably letting out early.
Yeah, there was a lot more empty seats appearing in the stands. Yeah, and then the game didn't go much longer. I don't know how much extra time there was, but the whistle blows and the Union get their this is our second road win of the season. And
Portland and now Nashville.
Yeah, and we now move up to second place in the Eastern Conference, right behind New York Red Bulls.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, New York Red Bulls, they do have, I'm checking our numbers here. They do have, they have played one more game than we have. So in theory, whenever we make up that Seattle game, and we win it, that would move us in front of them. But
which is rescheduled for April 30th, I believe.
Okay. Yes, it is.
All right, so that's mere about 3 weeks away. But yeah, so we've really moved up the table these past two game weeks.
Well, winning three straight games will do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I could get used to this.
I would agree. Now, I still would love to see some more of the 4-5 and 6-0 games, but I'm not complaining.
A win is a win.
I'm thrilled with their performance on the road, because even the years that they were setting it on fire on the road could be shaky, you know. Yeah. And I'm not saying that this is, you know, going to necessarily continue all the past success, not indicating future performance and all that kind of stuff. I always say this is my preparedness times whatever. I can never quite get this one right, but anyway, I am happy with their
success equation.
Drink, everybody, drink.
Yeah, exactly. But it would be nice if they would if that would continue, because I'm not as nervous when they're on the road now.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and again, Zemla, it's going to be really interesting to see this season. I was wondering, Blake must be both relaxing and more nervous with Zemla, because he knows if he's not there, he's got a good replacement. But at the same time,
not too good. Not too good. Also, our first win against the keeper not wearing red.
Yes.
What was he wearing?
What color are his hands now?
I think it was like a yellow green, but I could be wrong. So, so keep an eye out.
He did have on the Peter Cech padded helmet.
Yes, he did. He did.
Oh, he was wearing a scrum helmet? Yeah. Scrum cap or whatever they're called.
The 20s football helmet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So,
I was just going to say, I think that's it for that game then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, Gazdag then got named what team of the match day, right?
Yes, to the bench, which is a little ridiculous, but okay.
Really?
Yes. I know.
It feels like that's the honorable mention.
No
of, like,
respect.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so with that win, the Union continue their tour across country. They're heading south down to Atlanta on Sunday, this coming Sunday, April 14th. They'll be facing off against Atlanta at 2:30 p.m. Atlanta is currently in sixth place in the Eastern Conference. Again, still early days. You know, we got to be feeling good after these three wins in a row here. I don't know. Thoughts for the upcoming Atlanta game?
Is Guzan still in net for Atlanta?
Is Guzan still with
Guzan,
Atlanta?
Or did he retire?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But one thing that's kind of worrying me about Atlanta,
he's
is
in there. Yeah.
They have only given up 5 goals in their 6 games played. Mm. And that's, you know, that's impressive. Like the only other team that's had 5 goals allowed is Cincinnati. So, you know, and they've scored 10. So, you know, the Union have given up 7 and scored only 12. So their goal differential is the same, but, you know, that stingy defense could be trouble, especially since the Union have been kind of struggling a little bit to score. Not so much the last 3 games, but before that. So we'll have to see if Orris, you know, Foot is feeling better, and if he gets back out there with Sullivan, what the Union can do against that Atlanta defense. That's kind of what I think. I wonder if that's going to be the big challenge. And Atlanta not only is undefeated at home so far this season, but they've won all 3 of their home games.
Mm-hmm. I was just noticing that too, because I was looking them up.
We'll have to see. Hopefully it'll be a good game. Hopefully the Union will play hard, especially since they don't have any midweek games to distract them.
We'll see if Jim Curtin goes with the Indigo Montoya left-handed to right-hand formation strategy with this one.
They're the man in blue, I guess, in this case.
They didn't win. Inconceivable.
You keep saying word. Don't think it means what you think it means.
For younger listeners, that is reference to a movie called Princess Bride.
Get off my lawn!
Oh, I feel like we're going to have to start doing show notes about our references.
Yeah, right.
So I'm not sure.
I think we take the Mystery Science Theater approach in that the right people will know what we're talking about.
Yeah, that, or it's like a required reading list for our pod.
I mean, heck, you would reading, have viewing. To know what Mystery Science Theater 3000 is just to
get that. That's a bigger reach than Princess Bride. So, yeah.
And we just might have lost some more listeners. Yep. Or we gained some more. I don't know.
Very nice.
Again, ask your parents. Well, a little bit of Philly-related story, not Philly within the city, but across the pond in the English Football League in League One. So that's, I guess, so it goes, you know, Premier League, Championship, and then League One. And Reading FC is down in League One now. And, you know, I still check in on them from time to time to see what they're up to. But anyway, they traveled to Bristol Rovers. And I got to say, take my hat off to Bristol Rovers, because as the players come out into the field, right, at the beginning of the game, and they're playing music, when they came out in the field, they were playing the theme song to Rocky. So,
were they?
Yeah. So dun, dun, I was like... Dun, 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 dun. Now, unfortunately, maybe it followed a typical Rocky storyline. Bristol Rovers did not win the match. Reading won 2-0. But yeah, it's good to see a little bit of Philly there making it across the pond.
Very cool. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, maybe Bristol see themselves as the Philly of England. I don't know.
Or maybe
kind of, from what I know of Bristol. Yeah, kind of. Not that I know a lot, but yeah. So it's interesting because Reading could also make the same argument.
Sure. Yep.
So anyway,
we'll have to find somebody over there and compare some notes.
Yeah.
So if you're listening from either Bristol, UK, or Reading, UK, you know, hit us up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Emails pod@amorephillyunion.com, or just we're on a bunch of social media too. You can just ping us there.
Also, let us know how big the asterisk is next to Gosdog's achievements. What do you think?
Yes.
Non-existent or large, or somewhere in between.
Other Union news. I mean, it's not necessarily first team goal news, but they did win. The U17s did win their Generation Adidas Cup, which is a big deal.
Oh yeah,
they repeated this year. So Union Academy once again showing well against the international academies, and they actually their forward won the MVP of the tournament, and both that forward Rocio and Neil Pierre, who's one of the defenders for that team, were named to the best 11 of the tournament. So, you know, besides Kevin Sullivan, there's other Union players that are looking pretty positive up there.
That's great. That's great.
Look out, Donovan. You're going to have competition in a year.
Paul, not to put you on the spot, but the tournament itself, you said it's international?
Yeah, so like Arsenal, Real Madrid, CF Flamenco, there was a Korean club that sent their academy there. Yeah, they have, from what I understand, there's a U15 level and a U17 level. And last year, the Union's U15 team made it to the finals, but lost, and the Union's U17 team made it to the finals and won. Mm-hmm. So this is the second year in a row that the Union's U17 team has won this tournament.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah.
Testament, I guess, to our academy program too.
And hopefully these kids will stick with it and come up and get a chance to play for the first team at some point.
Do a lot of other MLS teams have academies? Do most, or
most of them do? Different clubs take it more or less seriously.
Yeah.
Besides the Union, the ones that have taken it seriously and have had success are unfortunately, you know, Dallas, Colorado to an extent. There are some that take it seriously, but haven't had as much success, like LA. Both Galaxy and LAFC both have respectable academies, but some of that's just because they pull from some very, very strong player base. Like there's a lot of really good players in Southern California for them to pull from. I think Orlando and Miami both have pretty good academies, but they haven't reached the same level as Dallas and Philly.
Just say, because ours definitely seems like one of the more advanced.
One of the most effective.
Yeah,
and I think it's two parts. One, they're good at producing you know, players, but they also give players an opportunity to use their skills against good competition. And because they're known to give players chances, better players will come and join the academy. So it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, or you know, self-feeding cycle.
It's circular.
It's something that we used to talk about with our friend's father, that we've mentioned him before on the pod, who was a FIFA ref, you know, kind of part-time. And he had many points, many failings of American soccer that he liked to point out. He was originally from Peru, but so he had thoughts. but
that's one way of phrasing it.
Yeah,
but I mean, say like, that's a very polite way of putting it.
Well, yes. No. I can't say I disagree, because you know, because he one of them that I recall was that they started too late. Here, you know, you know, you're getting people coming out of, it used to be you'd be getting people like coming out of college programs, and over in Europe you're getting teenagers, not always, but you know, and but you could be missing some key years there. I mean, the flip side of that, what always worried me about the academy system, is the ones who don't succeed, are they getting enough of an education, enough of a background to go do something else, you know, or are they just sort of tossed out of the system and, you know, good luck with it. I assume and hope that that's being handled. But that's, I had seen things for European teams where that wasn't necessarily well managed. So it is a bit of a concern. I'm not saying anything about our unions, our academy system, but that is the, you know, potential downside. It is a concern, but it's interesting to see. I think he would have been, he has passed, but I think he would have been very interested to see what they're doing in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So,
of course, then you have the other side of it, where you have players taking it too seriously too soon, and you know, you risk burnout. You know, as a coach, you know, I follow coaching blogs and podcasts and stuff, and there's a huge drop off in kids' sports participation between 12 and 14. It's something like 70% of kids will stop playing organized sports between 12 and 14, because those who are serious, you know, they just go to one sport at that point. Because if you want to play in high school, in whatever season that sport is, you're playing it every day of the week. And outside of the season, you're still probably playing it two or three days a week. And, you know, it's a lot on kids. So, you know, at middle school level, they're starting to see some of that. Like, you know, I know in our local public school, they have 5 day a week practices at seventh grade for their middle school team. And it's not surprising that kids get burnt out from doing that.
Yeah.
Now, some of them who really, really love it, they'll find a way to want to keep playing, and we'll have success. And, you know, I do think that the Union Academy does try to do periodization, so that their players, they play a lot in the season for soccer, and then they ramp them down. They play, but it's not as intense the rest of the time. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have any kids in those programs, so I can't speak with any sort of firsthand experience or any authority, as I'm not involved in them. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what the Union Academy produces. I mean, obviously with McGlynn, Harriel, and Sullivan showing well so far, this season, and the Paxton and Brendan Aaronson coming up before them, and others out of the academy. There's a proven track record there, so it's great. It's a great way to approach it.
Yeah.
I wanted just to share one last thing before we're moving off. Did you see the Philadelphia Phillies jerseys? Philly style ones,
Philly jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, they're different. It says Philly across them,
uh-huh.
and they're in a blue and black look to them. They're actually going to wear them on their Friday home games through the season. Uh-huh. It's kind of like a new kit that they put together. It's a special set of jerseys and merchandise that are coming out, and I'm like, That's pretty sharp. I almost wonder if some of the other Philly teams, the Sixers, the Flyers, the Eagles, the Union, might pull on something like that to put together their own Philly merch like that. And like I can see Mitchell and Ness, who does a lot of additional Philadelphia Union gear, might be interested in doing something like that. It'd be fun. I was impressed by them. I think they look pretty sharp. I haven't gotten around to buying one yet, but it's certainly something to consider.
It almost looks like a tribute to the Union.
Yeah, it does kind of. It's that blue and gold look.
Yeah, because I was sort of like, is there a connection here I'm missing? You know. So,
do you know why Philadelphia's colors are blue and gold?
I think I do, right? Or
the Philadelphia flag.
Yeah, but why is the flag blue and gold?
Oh, why is the flag blue and gold? Yes, Swedish? I actually do know this. Yes,
there's a Swedish connection, the blue and yellow.
I don't remember what it is. I just remember that it's Swedish. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was there was a predominant population of Swedish immigrants when they got around to incorporating Philadelphia and picking a flag. Basically, enough Swedes had immigrated to this area that they had the heavy leverage, from what I remember and in my history. And that's why Philadelphia's flag is blue and gold and has that coloring to it. Yeah.
I think
they're pretty cool looking.
I mean, I don't want to say like this is from the Union, but wow, this is really inspired, or aesthetically, artistically, it reminds me a lot of the Philly.
Well, the jacket style. that they sell that's just Philly across the front.
Yeah.
That looks like something that Curtin would wear on the sideline.
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
Hey, this is the crossover now to bring in some baseball fans to kind of join the Union.
I honestly thought that might have been happening, like especially if they're wearing on Fridays because our games tend to be on Saturdays.
Yeah.
That would be nice. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting too, Paul. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it's a sharp looking jersey. Also, interesting enough, also similarly priced, but
gosh, they're expensive.
Yeah, they've really gotten expensive.
This is personalized, the one I pulled up.
Oh, it's so personalized.
That might be part of it.
It's personalized, and it's probably an actual, it's not a replica jersey, it's an actual jersey.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Union actual jerseys are around that price too, with customization. So,
but
it looks cool.
Yeah, good job, Phillies. Might have to go pick one up. All right. Anything else for the good of the order?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. Well, if you want to jump in on our conversation here, share some thoughts and ideas, you can reach us at our website, amorephillyunion.com. Drop us a message, question, comments, thoughts via email at pod@amorephillyunion.com. On Twitter, we are amorephillyu. Instagram, YouTube, Threads, we are amorephillyunion. Our Spotify playlist continues to grow and evolve. Find us on Spotify at A More Philly Union.
The playlist.
So I guess we're on there twice. And keep downloading us wherever you get your podcast. No longer
feel free to throw us a like or give us a rating if you want to.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But download us wherever you get your podcasts. You know what they are, but keep on downloading us, and let's hit that 3,000 downloads sooner than later. So thanks again for listening to another episode of A More Philly Union. We are your hosts. I'm E.
I'm C.
And I'm Paul. Go Union.
and we're out.
I was going to say help us hit totality just to round up the eclipse thing.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that one's kind of cheesy.
Oh, like it's less cheesy than the rest of the moon. Yeah.